This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 684, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick Week, episode 684. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is Josh Lanigan.
What's up?
Were you gone last week?
I was. Thank you so much for filling in. You people don't understand that, like, I bailed on Connor at the absolute last minute and then didn't even think about it until, like, 2 days later. And I was like, wait, did you handle that?
Thank Ryan.
Well, I know, and I did. I very specifically was like, Ryan, thank you so much. So, and you know what? Thank you, listeners, for being flexible on that. I didn't have a lot of choice in that, but I'm very glad to be back here now.
Well, you're always missed. We all have stories. We are iFanboy. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book called The Pick of the Week. Sometimes it's picked at the last second, sometimes early. It depends on when we're done. So we're flexible now, unlike 6 years ago, Josh.
Oh, we had to have it done on Wednesday.
It's been 6 years since we did a written Pick of the Week review.
I don't miss it.
Longer than I thought it was. It hit me hard the other day. Anyway, I do kind of miss it because I liked formulating my thoughts. You know,
I do, but different world. What I do like now is that when I'm thinking about when I'm reading it, or you know, after I make the pick, then I think about it and I kind of put it together in my head, and there is a very avalanche feeling of starting to do it on here. Like when I start to talk about it, I'm like, you come up with a thesis right now, you son of a bitch. And I usually do. And then I feel proud of myself.
If you're a new listener, don't know what we're talking about. We used to do a 1000 word written review of the Pick of the Week every Wednesday.
It started before the podcast. We started that
well before the podcast,
19 years ago.
We did it for 13 years.
Yeah.
And, it made doing the show slightly easier in some ways.
But yeah. Yeah. You're right.
Anyway, that was 6 years ago. Since we've done that last.
All right.
Which is crazy. Anyway, what are we doing here? We're talking about the Pick of the Week, the patron pick, other books in the week, the listener mail if we've got time. We always try to have fun because that's the point of all this. In the midst of all of this morning, I got up, I turned on the news. It took me 4 seconds before I went, ugh, and turned it off.
Yeah, good call. So
that's why we do this show, to counteract that. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be spoilers. Exercise some caution. Josh, you had the pick. You had the pick of the week.
I did have the pick of the week, and it was a relatively light week.
Yes.
You know, it's funny because I got it done a little early this week, or I made an attempt to. I still finished it like midnight last night or something like that, even though I tried my best to be done on Wednesday. The pick of the week is Avengers number 19. I was back and forth on a few of the books.
There were some really standout books this week, and this was one of them.
There were, and it was like a... There wasn't a, wow, this blew me away. It was a 4.25, 4.5 star week. which is not the same as a 4-star week, if you know what I, if you could follow me there. I went with Avengers. I feel a little bit like the last few issues of Avengers that are in the midst of this whole War of the Realms event, which is, I think, more than I was bargaining for. I don't think I realized how expansive it would end up being between the crossovers into the books. I'm not complaining. I want that to be noted. And the sort of additional miniseries that are tacked on. And again, you know, the promise is always you don't have to read all of them, and I don't think that you do.
No, you don't. There's a lot of overlap.
I think the Avengers book is where a lot of this germinated, along with Jason Aaron's Thor book. And I think for the last couple of issues, the Avengers book was kind of lost in the middle of this. Like, the timeline has been a problem through all of these, which we've talked about for years about these, and it is what it is. But this issue, it took Gorilla Man. I'm going to just Gorilla Man. You know, who's on the sort of Avengers B team. I don't know if he's not the Strike Force is the other thing, but Agents
Gorilla
of Wakanda.
Man's on the Agents of Wakanda team,
right.
which is Black Panther's Strike Force, which you'd think is, I guess it's not weird. It's kind of like Batman's Outsiders.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, you know, because Black Panther is the head of the Avengers now, and he was like, I'm bringing in some extra thing for auxiliary duties and stuff like that. Now, Gorilla Man was an agent of Atlas, I believe, quite a long time ago, or at some point. I think he's an older Marvel character that wasn't used very often and then sort of shows up every once in a while. But I think that what's been nice is over the course of this Avengers arc and the ancillary things that have come along, like, Jason Aaron's built up a cast of characters, and it's funny because he started off with the Grant Morrison thing, like everybody in Avengers are the big dogs, and then before we know it, like the story's really about some of these other people.
Yeah,
it's about, you know, Gorilla Man and Blade and whoever else, and the other Avengers are there, but so anyway, this to me, this issue felt a lot like the Jason Aaron who we came to fall in love with on Scalped. If you will follow with me, a bunch of this is following the adventures of what's happening with this War of the Realms, which, by the way, they have really made feel consequential
and big.
Yeah, in a way that, like, I always go back to Fear itself, which may have been a decade ago for now, for all I know. Like, that was supposed to be that, but it didn't take. And this does. And maybe it's because I'm reading the books and enjoying them or whatever. But the whole time, you know, you're sort of getting the inner thoughts of Gorilla Man, who's been given a job by Black Panther, and he gives his thoughts on being around Black Panther and his thoughts about Tony Stark, and, you know, how you know, most of these loudmouth rich guys like Tony Stark don't impress me much. And then is like, the only exception is Steve Rogers, and talks about, he touches on little corners of all of this stuff. He talks about how tough Carol Danvers is and how good that makes him feel about it. And then he gets into a big fight. You know, like, and sort of seems to save the day, sort of does, at great cost, and really gets you in touch with him. And then, so the spoiler part of this is that at the very end, you realize that he's a gorilla because he's been cursed. And he, at some point, made a deal with the Dracula people, who were, again, planted earlier in this, to betray the Avengers. And he feels really, really bad about it. And we don't know how to feel about it because we just spent all this time coming to like this person, and now he's the bad guy. The Scalped part.
Yeah, I totally get it now when you said it. It made sense. What's great about this issue is, as you said, as we follow this guy because everyone else is really busy and they all have their own specials.
That's a good way to put it.
And you know, we even get that here where he's head of security, internal security for the Avengers Tower. And
so he wears a dress shirt. He wears the middle management skull shirt.
He's a professional, Josh.
Yeah.
But we get one page where Freya is sending everyone out on their missions, and those are the other books. Like,
yeah,
she sends Cap and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and Wolverine and Spider-Man out, and that was this week's Strike Force Land of Giants book. And then he sends out Punisher and Blade and Ghost Rider, and that was one of those other books. So, like, they're all off on their missions, which you can follow if you want. Mm-hmm. Or not. You just know they're off on missions. That's why we're following around these other smaller characters in the mountain as it's being attacked by Dark Elves, because they're all off. I feel like, you know, nothing ever really matches up, but I feel like they're doing a pretty good job of making this seem mostly coherent. Where, oh, okay,
they're doing that, so this is why we're over here. And if you want to go over there, you can read that one over here, but you don't have to because all the main actions in the main book. But like, I feel like this is actually holding together well so far. Now, I think it's working.
The only thing is, and we're going to talk about this in the next issue, is that the Strike Force stuff was alluded to, I don't know, like 2 weeks ago. Like, it was like after they'd returned.
Publishing is clearly off. There's just a couple things that have happened before. One of the books we read this week, and it wasn't the one we're going to talk about. I think it was late because it was before a book that came out last week. And then at the end, it was like, read this, it's coming soon. And it was like, that already happened. So it hasn't happened a lot, but it was noticeable this week.
Yeah. But didn't make the books unenjoyable.
No, you just have to, it's your elastic brain. You know, I think everyone who reads comics has this weird like plasticity in their brain where they kind of just go with it. Mm-hmm. Odin is great here in the hospital with next to the Gorilla Man.
Except he's blonde, and I was confused for a minute.
That was a little. Maybe he's younger after Odin's sleep. Never made any sense anyway.
It's true.
Freya's great. I loved the idea that Gorilla Man meets up with the Russian bear to have a clandestine meeting. So they do it in the zoo.
Great.
Like in the cage. So at least it's like, okay, gorilla and a bear in a cage, same cage, not cage, but same. Enclosure, a little strange, but at least they're not walking down the street talking to each other.
It's the Wundagore Zoo as well.
Right.
So I you know what's kind of nice about this part is that I like that the bear's not a complete evil character. I want to like the bear.
I don't think he's evil. He's just Russian.
Well, right. So he's the other. He's the enemy in a way, always to a certain extent, but it doesn't go that way. And then the other thing is that I think at first. I was not super into the Ed McGuinness art. I can appreciate it.
It's not necessarily your style, but
no, it's not even like a throwback style of art. It's an art that straddles eras to a certain extent. I don't think it's fully modern, but I also don't think it's fully of a different time. That being said, you know, I'm in the middle of this and I'm noticing specifically, I was noticing the inking. The Mark way Morales. That sort of Mark Morales, that sort of old timier inking, and I really
it's a very old Marvel ink, and he's great. I follow him on Instagram. He posts a lot of videos of him inking. Like he's a terrifically talented. Inker?
Is he actually ink or is he doing it digitally?
He's actually inking.
Yeah. So
at least on the stuff he posts, it may not be. Who knows? I mean, there's commissions, and you know,
exactly. But like, I noticed it on this. Is the point. Like, I noticed the inking on this, and I thought, wow, this looks really good. And I also think, like, I don't know if Ed McGuinness was a little rusty to start with, but I think he found his groove on this. And I thought it looked great, and it was entirely appropriate. You know, he's got a giant gorilla, you know, in a dress shirt, you know, doing sort of hanging around stuff and then doing big action stuff. There's a lot of wonderful pages in here. I think the inking completely pulls it together in the end. And then, you know, we have to mention this, it's super sad, is that the colorist on this was Justin Ponser and Eric Ansoniega. Justin Ponser passed away this week from sort of, I guess, a protracted battle with cancer. And I didn't know him. I've never met him. I've seen his name on 1,000 comic books I've read.
Well, he's one of those modern Marvel colorists who colored everybody. He was a Bendis guy. Like, he was in the last 90, he was 42 or... around that age, around our age. And he's been coloring, you know, 20 years he's been coloring Marvel stuff. So he's been that modern era colorist guy.
And the colors on this book, I know I mentioned Odin's hair, but like other than that, like the colors in this book are exactly what they need to be. It's not too much. It's not too little. It's not the super cool sort of more modern style. It's the Avengers book, and it matches with what Ed McGuinness is doing really well and what Mark Morales is doing. It's sort of a timeless comic book style throughout this whole thing. I just thought it was really well produced, and I'm not even saying that because I'm looking for things to say about it. Like I literally noticed like the cross hatching and on the little lines as I was reading, I was like, oh, you don't see that as much anymore.
Right.
I like that a lot.
It's
just a quality book, you know. It's not the world ending book that, you know, it's not like the big moment like it is in the other books, but also the story they're telling you, spending time, you're like, oh, I like this Gorilla Man guy. I like hanging out with him. I like looking him on the page. And then the end, you go, oh, this is going to be a problem. Like, this is going to be a big deal.
And what's great about it is that it's a book that takes place squarely within the War of the Realms.
Yep.
But the underlying story, as you mentioned, it's revealed at the end, is related to a previous Avengers arc. So it's still within the Avengers story. The Dracula arc was, you know, pre-War of the Realms. So that's the main reveal here, and that's what's cool, because he's weaving together multiple things. And it was a really good issue.
Yeah, it was just a solid superhero comic book, I think. And also just as part of a whole, I thought it was really successful. So there we go. That was the pick of the week that I went with, but there could have been others, including a lot of the list that's coming up.
Well, the War of the Realms, Strike Force, The Land of the Giants, number one, the long title. Tom Taylor writing, Jorge Molina pencil, Adriano De Benedetto inks, and David Curiel colors. I thought this was terrific. This was the best book I read this week.
Yeah, you reached out. You said, make sure you read this, which I do not question when you say that to me. I think we both learned that reflex. It was delightful all the way through. It's mostly focusing on Spider-Man. I think Tom Taylor writes a younger version of Spider-Man than we're used to, but this is not a complaint, you know. And the thing is, like, 2 weeks ago we saw the aftermath of this, or they were heading off and they were still on the horses. I don't know, but I remember a couple of weeks ago, like, why does Spider-Man have
a
helmet?
In the War of the Realms, they were going on this mission.
Right.
Again, sort of elastic, but like,
yeah,
this is that full on mission, in which we saw them go and find Thor in the last issue of the War of the Realms, the pick of the week issue, where they discovered Thor with the stump arm and everything. So this was fleshing out those three pages of that one issue into a full special.
Yeah. And I was glad for that, because I was like, oh, I'm interested in this. And then to read it after the fact, they really made something out of it. You have the team, which is Spider-Man, Captain America, Wolverine, Power Man, and Iron Fist. And they pick out their Asgardian weapons. They get their winged Valkyrie horses. And there's lots of like big hero moments. But they're kind of always undercut by a funny thing. It's a really funny issue.
And what's great is because at the end you get gut punched.
Yes.
So it's funny, 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 funny until it's not funny. And that makes the not funny even more impactful. And, you know, leading up to it. So the armory was great. I love that every piece of weaponry had a little explainer card.
Yep.
With its title and what it does, which
who
was
did
fun.
That, by the way? Which of the agents of Wakanda is like, all right, I'll do the clerical work on the weaponry?
you know, we've loved the imagery of Spider-Man's silly Viking helmet, but now it actually makes sense and is actually really important to the story here. And it was
structure
great.
Of that bit of storytelling was excellent. Like, it was that was a really well done sort of setup and payoff, I think.
Yeah, Logan gives him a helmet because it's silly. He wants him to look silly, and it's a joke up until he realizes he can talk to the Valkyrie horses with it. But that's also used as a great comedic device. I laughed really hard when I digitally turned the page, and so we see Spider-Man having a conversation with his horse for a long time, talking about the horse's name and then the other horses that have died and how brave they are. And then you turn the page and it's the point of view of the other heroes. So you just see Spider-Man making horse noises. And
the dialogue, which I can't imagine was not fun for Jason to write and for,
which Tom Taylor wrote.
I'm sorry, you're right. For Tom Taylor Wright and Joe Sabino to letter is nay, 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 Winnie, nay. And the Avengers just look at him like, what is wrong? And he doesn't explain himself. They just deal with it. It was fun.
It was great. And then, you know, they find the giant. They fight the giants, and then the horses end up getting killed. And that's this really sad moment. And, it, you know, I just thought this was really terrific. And
yeah, the fight had weight.
Stories are great.
Yep, it was great. It was a really
also,
fun issue.
I always love moments where, like, you know, the horses die and Logan's like, kneel. He's telling everyone else to honor the horses. Like, but it's always great when it's Logan doing that because for all his berserker rage and cool guy attitude, he's very honorable.
Yeah.
And these horses, you know, gave their lives for them. So the horse bows to the other dead horses and Logan's like, bow.
Yeah. And also there's a bit earlier where it's another good joke and payoff is that Peter is calling his horse Buttercup. And Logan's like, you named your horse? And he's like, you didn't. And he said, my horse is called Horse. And so you think that he's being a jerk about it. Then that pays off. That those two panels pay off later, and that the horse, we learn the horse's real name, and he's like, oh, I was calling you Buttercup. And he's like, that is also a nice name. Like, the horse is not offended by it. And then it's paid off like, yes, Logan called the horse horse, but he respected it as much or more than anybody else. That didn't matter. It just,
so it was also a warrior. Like, it was,
yeah,
it was a great issue. Jorge Molina's art was really strong, wonderful. I thought. Great inks by Adriano Di Benedetto.
And, yeah, it was like inkers on two of these books.
The colors were terrific. Like, this is a really good looking book as well.
Yep.
Between this and Avengers, I thought you had really two strong issues that looked great. That red really, as you said, there feels like there's stakes here. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, it's comics. We all know this. At the end of the day, there's no stakes. Yeah, sure. But this, in the moment you're reading it, it feels like there's stakes.
It has to feel like there's stakes, or you have to care about it enough to spend your time.
And these are the stories you want in a big event saga. You want these big dramatic moments. You want characters who don't necessarily normally hang out together, but know each other well enough they can bounce off each other. And you want Cap in like a silly, you know, Cap jacket, and like, it's all great. All this is great.
I always love that when you play those out to their conclusion, like, well, wait, who made that jacket? Right. Who is wasting the time, resources? We're like, you need a special outfit for this. Or does he have a whole closet of specialized clothing that we just don't get to very often?
That's what S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing while he was in the ice. They were just making him clothes. I also liked in the very beginning where Peter's like, I don't want a sword. I don't want an axe. I don't really like, I'm not really into killing people. So Cap gives him a shield. It says here.
Again, useful. That's nice on multiple levels. Like, yeah. It's a Cap moment. It's a Spider-Man moment. It's a moment of the two of them coming together, and it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's a really, I get the sense, the Tom Taylor stuff, he's a thoughtful storyteller.
He's good. We've been talking about him more lately. Yep. He's been around for a long time, but we've been talking about him more lately on the show. He's a very talented writer. Yep. And this is, again, there's a lot of these issues this week. I didn't read all of them, but this was one of the better tie-in issues I've read in this event so far. Really good. Really, really good.
I agree. Did you read Ghost Tree?
I did not, because I was not on the show that week when it was one of the three patron picks.
Yeah, sure. It was one of those ones that was surprisingly good. And I say surprisingly is that it's completely unknown team. It's coming up from IDW, which is a crapshoot, really, in a way, sure, just because there's so many licensed things. Yeah. But written by Bobby Kurnow, art by Simon Gain, lettering by Ian Herring and Beckham Kinsey. It's a really beautiful looking book. So in the last issue, we're introduced to, I'm not going to say anybody's name because I don't remember them, this guy, the protagonist, and his grandfather, with whom he was really close, had died, but he agreed to go meet him, by a certain tree, basically. And he finds out that his grandfather's ghost is there and he can talk to him, but there's also a lot of other ghosts. And apparently there's a hereditary reason why this guy can talk to the dead at this place. And there's ghosts that are still lingering. This sort of cleared that up a little bit. You sort of see the scene. He goes to the ghost tree and there's all these other ghosts there, you know, who have problems. There's a samurai who's been beheaded, and he's so angry about the fact that happened to him. And I don't know his name, and I will learn it as I go through this. But he talks him down, basically. He's like, that's really awful what happened to you. And the guy's like, yeah, it is terrible. And he's like, well, when did it happen? It happened in 1574. And he's like, well, it's 2019 now. You did a lot of good. You know, focus on that. Don't worry so much about, you know, how it ended. This person who did something bad to you was terrible, but, you know, what are you doing? Just let go. And the ghost, you know, he helps the ghost. It's like ghost therapy. Another guy comes along he's like a mechanic in overalls, and his face is all melty, like Raiders of the Lost Ark. And he literally just says, I would like to talk to you about my melted face. And we cut away and we see the grandfather talking to another ghost going, he's really good at that. You know, he's not creeped out by it. He's really helping it. And then his grandfather gives him tips, like, you gotta be careful. They'll sort of all start gathering around you, and ghosts get, you know, upset about this kind of thing. And it's just it's like a slow process of world building and figuring out where we all this. His family is back at his grandmother's house in the woods, and there's sort of more character and real world stuff going on there. And then the last bit is his ex-girlfriend, who died very young, is a ghost, and she comes to talk to him. And it's a kind of a sweet, kind of a creepy scene. There's something going on that we don't know about. I like the art. I like the production design of this book. I like that it came from out of nowhere. I don't know who any of these people are. It's not like any other comic book I'm reading. And I liked that the patrons showed it to me. And mm-hmm. and I thought, oh, when's that second issue coming out? And I happened to look it up and figure out that it was out this week, and I almost missed it. And I sent, I told Ryan, too, because Ryan and I both really liked it, because he was on the show that week, and he was like, oh, thanks. And so, you know, I was like, and this was nearly pick. I wrote this in as pick at one point. And then I changed it. But that's how good I thought it was.
Well, all right, I'll read it. I'll check it out.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. It sounds good.
Yeah.
Is there an overall story? I don't know. Not that there isn't, but do you have a sense of what it is yet?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure that there's like the mystery aspect of it is why he can do this. And then it's going to be like, what is the purpose of him doing this? And what is the threat that's – because this the end of the issue sort of premonitions a threat that is coming up. And you know, it is a supernatural ghosty – you know, sort of paranormal kind of story, which is not always my favorite thing, but it's couched in enough real character stuff. You know, he's going through the beginning stages of a divorce, you know, where you're like, I don't think this is going to work, you know? And so he calls home a couple, like there's a lot of very real emotional character stuff that I think makes it work. In addition to, it's really good looking, you know, it's a good book. IDW.
I struggle with assassination. That's right. Assassination number 3.
Yeah.
Only because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot to remember. And I almost feel like this would be better to read collected. However, I was able to hold on enough to where the events that happened in this issue were very important and good. And the revelation at the end was also made me go, ooh. So
yeah,
I'm holding on. He is
skirting a knife edge with a lot of characters and a lot of motivations and things going on. When I say he, this is Kyle Starks, art by Erica Henderson. I feel like we're not like huge tastemakers, but I feel like when I see Kyle Starks' name now, I'm like, that's a guy to watch.
Yeah.
And we said that on Rock Candy Mountain, we found that and we both went, ooh, And he has not let us down on that front. There were several very good jokes in this book. It's a good plot. There's good characterization. I like the art. It's all perfect or whatever. But there was this one bit that my wife was in the room and I was reading and I laughed really hard. And she's like, what? And when she says that, I'm like, you don't want me to explain a comic book to you.
It would take way too long.
But I did. There's a bit where the guy, like the one girl kills people and he's like, aren't you worried about witnesses? And she goes, are you kidding? I'm an Asian American woman. I'm an Asian woman in America. And they cut to a guy getting interviewed by the police. And the guy goes, can you describe the killer? He goes, she was, I don't know, Chinese, maybe Japanese. And it's like, how old would you say she was? Somewhere between 15 and 500. And I was like, that's a strong joke, you know, and the girl's aware of it. You know, you get to know the characters. And of course, then they're assassins. So people get killed and there are stakes. There's a really great, you know, bloody, you know, Frank Quitely / preacher style, you know, violent fight. It's right on the edge of cartoony and sort of realistic, you know, violence. It's really fun book, I think.
No, it's completely fine. It's just hard to keep. I'm glad they have the little ranking in the beginning. Oh, if only because I go through it and go, oh yeah, that guy. Oh yeah, that guy. Her. The old guy, like I remember that helps. If I didn't have that, I might be totally lost. But there's a lot of things, and it's just I'm on the edge of being like, oh, what's the significance of that again? Because I can't go back and read them all. I don't have the time.
Well, because the book is actually monthly,
right?
You know, like who can say?
But as I said, they go on a little mission. There's something that happens during the mission that's cool, and then at the end you realize why it's important, and that's interesting. So I think this is a really, really good book. I'm not knocking it.
I'm knocking
my own addled brain.
Getting that. I hate to compare like this guy's funny. You know, I'm getting a little of the Mark Russell vibe in that, like, oh, he could fill in a space like that going forward. And I'm looking forward to see what Kyle Starks does going forward. I think it's a lot of really good signs.
Yeah, it is good because, you know, he did jokey Rock Candy Mountain, which did have action, but it was totally humorous action. And then he did.
But also there was a story with the heart underneath that, like, that we find out.
What I mean is, like, he did that kind of thing. Then he did Mars Attacks, which was in the similar vein to Rock Candy Mountain, very funny, but also had action in it. But this is much more of like your traditional action book that is done through his lens. So he's it's in that same vein. It's recognizable, but it's also more, you know, guns and blood and.
Yep.
So he's showing his, he's expanding his range a little bit with every book.
Yeah, and having fun. It's one of those things like, oh, these creators are having fun making this book, and it shows through.
The Flash, number 71, chapter 2 of year 1, or chapter 2 is the mystery of the missing letterer, which I feel like Agatha Christie should come back and write. So this is the second issue in a row of The Flash with no letterer credited.
Was that the one from last? Because when I wrote the script, I used the old one, and I was like, who the hell is the letterer? That's weird.
There's been no letterer credit on this. The letters were divine. The letters appeared as if on a tablet on the mountaintop. And that's how we know what they're saying. This has been great. This has been really, really great. We've been maligning Flash. You dropped it. I was getting sick of the Sage Force and Speed Force and Strong Force stories, which was not necessarily Josh Williamson's fault. It was all tied into the metal stuff. But here we take a step back to go tell Barry's beginnings. And this is the Josh Williamson who did such a great job initially when he took over the book. This has been terrific. You read the last issue. Did you read this one?
No.
Really good. This is the one where, if you recall, the cliffhanger, he ran so fast he ended up in the future.
Right, right.
And old bearded Barry Allen was there.
I should have read this, I believe.
Old bearded Barry Allen is great. He is terrific. He basically gives – it's a primer. He gives Flash some lessons on some of the things he can do with the Speed Force. He helps him get home by rebuilding the cosmic treadmill. But in the middle of it, they have a little fight with the supervillain, the Turtle, the previous sort of jokey Flash villain. And it turns out, you know, in the best comic book tradition, the jokey villain was actually very menacing underneath. He'd been doing stuff all these years they didn't know about, which is why in the future it's all fucked up because he's taken over Central City. So it's not the future that's fucked up. It's just Central City that's fucked up. So then as Barry goes back in time, of course, now runs into the Turtle again. Back when he's sort of silly. So now there's a thing here. He's got to prevent the future from happening. So it's there's a lot going on. And as we said before, the Howard Porter stuff is terrific. And right now, Flash used to be one of my favorite books. Then it became one of my least favorite books. And now it's one of my favorite books again. This is great.
Yeah. All right. I've got it here. I'll read it. I've lost track of what books I've dropped and what books I haven't.
I get you. I understand. I got some books this week from War of the Realms that I had totally dropped that I started reading. I was like, wait, I dropped this.
At least I have a surprise coming to me, and you were like, oh, I didn't want to eat this.
That's right.
You ordered the wrong thing.
But if you're a Flash fan and you dropped out, come back for the year one story because it's been really, really great. And even, you know, there's silliness at the end of the issue. There's a silly – the last page is kind of silly, but it's, you know, it's comics.
It is.
Let's take a quick break here and talk about how you can support iFanboy, the show, the entity, the people. We have a patron, as many do, patreon.com/iFanboy. Lots of things happening there. First of all, if you're listening to this on Sunday and you're a patron, of course, our hangout is tonight. And what that means is all the patrons at any level can hang out with us once a month, where Josh and I, and sometimes Ron, sometimes someone else, although it's never been someone else. I don't know why I just said that.
Could be.
It could be, though. Get on a video chat for an hour and talk about nonsense, and that's fun, and we have a good time doing that.
We should invite somebody else on sometime soon.
We should. It'd be one fun to get another person in there.
Yeah.
Get Ryan or Paul or somebody. And so that's fun. We do that once a month, and then we also have, you know, we have our Facebook group where there's a lot of chat going on. That's where a lot of the the patron super users, and that's where the patron pick tends to come out of, is that group. So we monitor that closely for subversive activity. Also, you know, you get your patron powers and your patron picks, but that's all awesome, and we thank everyone who does that. And so let's talk about how you can help there. The next stretch goal being the monthly comics, non-comics media podcast, which I can imagine, Josh, that if we had that, we would do the Deadwood movie.
We would
do Deadwood in general, but then we would do the Deadwood movie specifically. That's what I imagine we would do.
Well,
we are both in the middle of rewatching it right now.
As I stand here having pounded myself flatter and hammered shit, I stand beholden to no man. Sorry.
So if you want a monthly non-comics media podcast in which we will talk about things that aren't comics related once a month, go to patreon.com/iFanboy. In addition to that, we'll upload all the missing video shows and iFanboy mini shows that we used to do 10 years ago. We'll upload those to our YouTube channel. They got pulled off the web by our old distributor. We'll put them back if we get the next stretch goal.
Patreon.com. Screw you, Discovery Channel.
So those were fun shows. Yeah. So I was talking to somebody about those recently, and somebody who was also on our network at the time, and he was flabbergasted that we did 7 shows a week. Could not believe it.
We do 7? I guess we got the audio show.
We had 5 minis, the audio show, and the full-length video show.
Fuck. Well, we were full-time then. That was still a lot of work. You know what's funny, though, is that I never recorded one of those minis and thought, I'm out of ideas. Like, it was always, there was just so many, there's so many things in comics. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, totally fun.
Great time. If I was doing it now, 10 years later, I probably would have said that. But, you know.
You know, it was fun. Great time. So if you want to see those old shows that are missing, there's over 100 minis. There'll be a lot of shows that'll pop up. So if you want to get that, patreon.com/iFanboy. Our t-shirt store, iFanboyThreadless.com. Our 7 shirts, iFanboy logo, Herm, Pick League podcast, ratings, one is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. They're all there. iFanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal directly. iFanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to our Books Blowed books, as well as a general Amazon link. And we thank everyone who does that to help support iFanboy, keep it going, pay the bills, you know. Thank you. That's all. Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's move along to the next thing. Detective Comics number 1004. I wanted to check in on this because I have been enjoying this storyline. I very much like the again, Brad Walker, Andrew Hennessy on inks. I don't know if we're seeing a return to inking, but I'm cool with that.
It may just be a weird coincidence that all the 4 books that are still linked came out this week, but yes. Yep.
And Nathan Fairbairn on colors, who is also excellent. Yes. I didn't like this. I like the art a lot, but you know, I was holding on with this story for a little bit, and then we got into here's the explanation, and we spent this whole time doing a captioned biography of the
villain.
Antagonist. The villain. And it just was a little, I don't know, it was like, okay, it's this. And it lost, I think, its forward momentum for me.
So I guess the question is, now that we've got this out of the way, are you going to keep reading this?
I don't know. Maybe. I'll probably check out the next one. I think there's a lot here.
We're back to the fun story.
Yeah. I really didn't like, but there was like one of, you know, they weren't exactly full page splashes, but, you know, they're just like, and then this happened, she did this, and she hung out with the Joker, and the Joker read her stories, and now she's this, and they think that Batman killed her mom, and I was like, and I think that was actually the moment where I was like, that's stupid.
Well, he didn't. It was just a batarang.
No, but she was led to believe that Batman did it. And the Dr. Arkham or whoever, her dad, said, I never bothered to clear it up for her. He says that specifically, and that I did not like.
Okay.
Because it's an artificial motivation. Now, you can hold him indirectly responsible for leaving his razor sharp batarang around so that somebody could do something stupid. And I actually thought that was enough motivation. And then they went and they clarified that she was under the impression that Batman had killed his mother, either accidentally or, you know, it would have been accidentally, but, you know, his hubris, blah, blah, blah. I didn't like that as a choice. Double check that. Go back and read it. I'm looking for that part.
I don't remember that happening. Wait. Yeah. You're right. That happened.
Yeah.
That's right. So no, I never told her. Yeah.
I didn't. That choice seemed from like why? Why? You know, like if you
were. Right. I thought it was enough that just in the middle of this riot at Arkham Asylum that someone picked up a batarang and threw it and it killed their mother, but you know, not intentionally. But that would be enough to make. But no, you know.
And also, I mean, maybe – so then, you know, in this case, the villain's kind of the father because of that and because
of – they're all bad.
Yeah, but also because like it's really hard if you're a person who's running Arkham that you're going to let your daughter have run of the place when you – like you don't let anybody talk to the Joker. You'd know that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it – that doesn't make sense to me. And I know that like the Arkhams are – you know, not necessarily come from the same place morally, but I don't know. It rang false to me, basically.
Action Comics 1001. Is that right? 1011. We're not used to saying numbers like this.
No.
Leviathan, great cover. We don't normally talk about the covers, but I think in the digital world, the covers, at least for me, are becoming less relevant. But anyway.
Great cover.
Superman being crushed underneath the weight of a giant Leviathan stone is a cool imagery. Strangely enough, the season finale of Supergirl teased Leviathan is coming.
Huh.
Like, oh, so we're doing this now. Anyway, that's irrelevant to this book. I like this.
This is a beautiful book. If you look at that that page, page 8, where Superman's in the air, and this basically picks up where that last issue, which is Pick of the Week, left off, and it just says London behind him. I thought it was a really nice design. But before that, there's this great action scene of what's her name?
Manhunter.
Manhunter, right. You know, like a special ops team, maybe or maybe not, comes to the door.
MCU.
Right, and she fights them all off. And takes out, like, I love that scene. Like, she just takes them all down methodically. So you go through that, you get somewhere with where we were in the last issue. Like, they covered a lot of ground here. So all the mysteries about what was going on in London with Chaz were sort of covered. And then we go and we go back to the Fortress of Solitude, where Jimmy Olsen had been hanging out with Amanda Waller, and she sort of ran house on everything and escaped. And there's this one little tiny moment where Jimmy Olsen, who's now 12 again, looks up. That being said, like, I think Steve Epting is great and totally unexpected to be good on this book.
Yeah.
I'm really coming around to it. And I think that they're figuring out the right way to do it. But Jimmy Olsen calls him Chaz, and he's like, my name isn't really Chaz, but you realize that Jimmy Olsen doesn't know who he is anymore. And there's this really beautiful four panel sequence where he goes, you can tell me your name. You can trust me. And he's like, I know I can. I've never not trusted you. It's for your own safety. And Jimmy's like, that's enough. That makes me feel better. And I was like, that's beautiful. And then finally you get, is it Jim Harper or something?
Yes, Jim Harper. Yeah.
The Guardian?
Yes.
Yeah. I love that character. So there's a lot of super Metropolis stuff going on in here. A lot of things got covered. It was a really enjoyable issue.
Well, I think very much like the War of the Realm, you know, this is leading up to Leviathan, which is, I guess, an event. I don't know for sure or if it's just Superman or not, but this felt very weighty. Like, there's stakes here. It's all slipping out of Superman's grasp. He can't keep everyone safe. There's too much going on. All the agencies have been attacked by this group. Like, it feels like there's a lot happening. So it feels important. You know, you've got Huntress here. You've got Manhunter. You've got The Question. You've got Jim Harper, Guardian. Like, you've got a lot of characters going on here. I also really like the final page. A very unusual layout, and just it's a way of showing a progressive Question. Plus, you've got the imagery behind them that shows, you know, all the other characters that are involved in this story. So I thought this was a really, really well done issue. I actually like younger Jimmy Olsen.
Oh yeah, no, it works. I think, but there was a bit where he's like, I am a war correspondent. And I was like, well, that doesn't quite jive with his face. But I looked quite young when I was 24, too.
Listen, so, Jack Kirby, your 8-year-old Jimmy Olsen doing all kinds of stuff.
Yep. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Leviathan. I'm excited for it. Everything leading up to it has been really good. So.
Yep. It was a good time. Doctor Strange, Mark Waid and Barry Kitson. That could be my whole review. Inks by Scott Koblish, or at least Ink Assists is what it says. Mm-hmm. It's a big cosmic story. Basically, some Mephisto and Dormammu did some cosmic shit, and they screwed up Galactus. And if they don't get Galactus something to eat soon, all of existence is going to go away. So it was just like big mystical / cosmic, you know, story with, you know, basically Stephen Strange trying to find a planet that Galactus can eat so that he'll be okay. And then there was a twist and a whole thing. And it was just really fun. Not pick of the week quality, but I've actually really been enjoying it. This is like the longest I've read Doctor Strange in my life.
And it's good to see those guys still together.
It really is.
Wade and Kitson.
And it works. Like, it's the right art style for this story. Again, it just... You know, it's what Mark Waid does really great. It's what Barry Kitson does really great, and I liked it.
Tony Stark, Iron Man 11. I know you dropped off this book.
I did.
So the cover says Tony Stark, Iron Man, God Killer, and just crazy, you know, Iron Man armor on the cover, painted style. And I turned the page to the title page, and it was like, Stark Realities Part 6. And I was like, we're still doing this? I thought we were over. I really thought the story had ended last issue, but it did not. So here, I wanted to mention this for two reasons. One, there was a first. Jim Zub is the co-writer.
I noticed that just now,
Which is interesting. I don't know if that's a thing or not. For Valerio, Schitti is still the artist, but so here we have the end of that story in which the AI from the Tony Stark's VR world is out in the world and causing havoc. And so Tony is basically mentally unleashed inside the VR world. Like, he's able to access all the brain power, and he comes up with this crazy god armor, god killer armor. And so when he gets back in the real world, he builds it really fast with this, you know, advanced 3D printing technology that his brother's company has. And it's this incredibly powerful armor. And at the end of it, they're all like, no one should have this armor. And he goes, it's okay, because I'm out of the VR, so I'm starting to forget how to build it. And I just destroyed it. So it was an interesting idea of all his brain power being unleashed temporarily, but it starts to leave like how you can't really remember a dream. And so he realizes how powerful it is. So he kills the invention. That was cool. On the other hand, it was revealed, I think in the last issue, that this isn't actually Tony Stark. Mm-hmm. This is a rebuilt from scratch, almost clone of Tony Stark. At this point, between him and his parents, I don't know what I'm reading anymore. It's not Tony Stark. His dad's not Howard Stark. What's the point?
I don't know. That's why I stopped reading it.
Also, he has a mustache, which is great.
So it's interesting that Jim Zub's come along, because normally that's what you do to transition.
Right, that was the old Marvel way back in the early 2000s. You add the co-writer, and then the co-writer would eventually become the main writer. But who knows? It could be a single issue thing. Who knows? I don't know what it means. But there was interesting things going on here, but there's a lot of also annoying things. And I really just hate the status quo of Iron Man in general with the parenting issue. And now it's not really Tony. He's a rebuilt genetic clone of Tony. And so it's like, well, that's not really Tony then. So that's weird. There was a bit at the end where he goes for a drink. He goes to a bar, mm-hmm. but Rhodey stops him.
Oh, wow.
And that was really good. Actually, a really good page. It was the final page of the issue. You know, it's that alcoholic thing. It's like, I don't know. I just needed a drink. And
yeah, that's really good.
And Rhodey's like, no, you're not going to do that. And,
but it's not Tony, so who cares?
Yeah. That was actually a really good page, a really good sequence, yeah. Two-page sequence. Because that'll happen with, you know, you come up, you, just because you're in recovery doesn't mean you're never going to be tempted again. And
that's
so,
literally the, yeah, that's.
It means you're always tempted. So it was nice to see him sort of come to the edge and his best friend, you know, stops him. Mm-hmm. So that was good. It's weird. The next issue is War of the Realms tie-in, so I'll probably read that, but I'm not sure what to do with this book. Not sure what to do.
I mean, stop reading it.
They should call it Clone of Tony.
Right. Tony Stark, God Killer, not really Tony.
So those are the books we're going to talk about. Patreon.com/FFanboys, where you can go, as we said earlier, and vote to add a book to the rundown. Anyone can vote. And this week was crazy. The voting was weird. People voted for a book that wasn't available digitally, which means it wasn't eligible. And somebody voted for a book from last week. It was very odd. But the winner ended up being Clue Candlestick, #1, from IDW, a licensed book about the Clue board game. With story art, letters, everything by Dash Shaw, who is not someone I'm familiar with. Do you know who Dash
I know
Shaw?
The name. I know the name, and I will say that when I got to the first page, I went, all right. But that's as far as that goes, because I thought, oh, this is going to be super precious. That's what I thought.
It has that style to it. Yes. Let's talk about I love Clue.
I know you do.
I'm a big Clue. I actually just played Clue not that long ago.
So you're saying you love the game, or you love the movie?
The movie. Yeah, sure. The movie's great. But like, I've always played. I've had, you know, that board game forever in my house growing up. And we played it all the time as kids. And I have one in my apartment right now. We played it not that long ago.
That's one of those games that I had, but I never had anyone to play it with. I'm like, Mom, you want to play this with me? She's like, I don't play that. I'm just like, okay.
So Dash Shaw, a lot of Fantagraphics books.
Yeah, that's kind of where he's going from. And I was reticent at first, because I was like, oh, we're combining a property, you know, with it's a board game property, let's be honest. You know, it's which isn't necessarily a narrative thing to sort of start from. And it took me a couple of pages before I was like, this isn't bad. from a mix of sort of, I mean, like avant-garde indie comic style, Fantagraphics, you know, that all makes sense into this thing that slowly coalesces into something I recognize. Like Professor Plum, that's this, like everything, you know, he's rebuilding it to a certain extent, you know, just using the very basics of who these characters are. I think, I don't know that there's a canon for Clue. But
well, I mean, unless you're a super fan of the movies, but that's just
right. But even that, I don't feel like this is built off of that.
No.
So, you know, as I kept going through it, I was really appreciating it. Again, I think I said this about another book. It seemed like it was very thoughtful and it was very intricate, but also a little bit whimsical. There was a really nice moment where, you know, Colonel Mustard is talking and you sort of get to know who he was. And then, you know, his personality is kind of annoying, but also kind of interesting and funny. And, you know, he's always there's a panel where he talks about how he's always on alert that somebody's going to try to kill him. So he's always following everybody's eye line. And then you see like a thing where you can see arrows pointing to what everybody is looking at, you know?
Right.
And there is a sense of menace and a sense of like, oh, what's going to happen? Like there's suspense to it. And then, of course, he gets shot. and then there's a great panel where after he's shot, somebody's like, he's not breathing, he's dead. And there's just one little tiny panel of him standing at the gates in front of St. Peter. And I was like, that's funny. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a lot.
Yeah, it was fun. I think that you were, it was very much in the Fantagraphics precious mold.
Yes.
Visually. But hey, why not? Take a really...
Yeah.
Indie comic creator and give them a licensed property like this and see what they do with it. It's similar to what they're doing with G.I. Joe right now, Sierra Morte. Mm-hmm. So why not? You know, otherwise no one's going to read it. So, I mean, it was fine. Yeah, it's about the best you can do with the Clue property.
Yeah, I mean, and he brought a thing to it to at least make it interesting, you know.
Had personality, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that goes a long way as opposed to a lot of the licensed properties have none.
I really wanted to know why Mr. Body had, like, a trucker mustache. And also...
I mean, who can tell with this aging hipster shit?
Didn't wear a jacket to dinner. That really bugged me.
We don't know anything about him.
Maybe he hates jackets. But he's got the whole rest of the suit on, and if this is his house, he's hosting a dinner party, decorum states he should be wearing a jacket.
Do you know what kind of person I am? I am the kind of person who got to the page that starts to elucidate the weapons. We have the rope that hanged Calico Jack. We have a lead pipe from ancient Rome that killed Galenius. We have the wrench that supposedly fixed Albert Camus' car. And then we have the revolver that assassinated President Garfield. And so I was immediately like, what was Charlie Gateau's gun? That is Charlie Gateau's gun. That is the correct gun. He drew it the right way. And I was very happy about that. And then I really like there's a bit... Like, they go through all the weapons, and the last one is the candlestick. And it's like, on a less morbid note, a 16th century candlestick given to me by a wealthy collector after her husband's premature demise. I personally find candlesticks rather stodgy, and I prefer the 18th century and all these things, but this piece has a unique presence that can't be put into words. It really should be held for its full effect. And I was like, that's cute. That's fun. That's good. I had fun with it.
It was fun. It was interesting. It was not expected. The real question, though, is... Are you going to read more of it? Because it's a mini. I thought it was just going to be like a one shot thing. But
if it's a mini series, like, I think there's. I'd like to. If it comes out on the same week as Ghost Tree, and they're both from IDW, there's a really good chance that I will remember that they're both there.
Okay.
I dug it though. I had fun reading it, and you know, like I said, first page I went, all right, here we go. Because you know, I thought it was going to be one of those things that had a lot of sort of stylistic drawings that weren't really telling me a story, and there's a lot of words that were more to be impressive than anything else. But everything had purpose.
Well, it opens up with Professor Plum, right? Is that who it was? And he's kind of like a Sherlock Holmesian character.
Yeah.
So that there was a bit of that, and also in the final page after they discover Mr. Body's body, it says next issue Scarlet in a study, which is a play on a study of Scarlet, the Sherlock Holmes story. So, you know. There's a bit of that in here.
The other thing is that there's a signaling thing going on is that the Professor Plum looks like every single older but not elderly intelligent black character in comics.
Yeah.
They all look like that now. There's a dude with a beard and a bald head. They're, like, they could all be interchangeable. And somebody needs to stop doing that. Like, it's like this zeitgeist thing that went around where all those characters, we see this thing, oh, okay, he's the middle-aged, intelligent black man. Like, I get it. It's the thing. Not Blue Marvel, though. That guy's rad.
So.
Okay. Well, we want a rating, don't we? We want a rating. How could I forget ratings?
Right. Rating.
4 stars.
4 stars. I'm going to go 3.5.
3.5 stars. Are you going to read more?
As you said, Josh, if I remember to read it, and it's not a week where I have 35 books, then there's a chance.
Well, different than Ghost Tree, I'm going to make sure I don't forget that or try real hard. I don't know that I will put the same effort into this.
Right.
But, yeah, if it's really problematic, I will probably read it, but I might not rush to read it before the show. I know. Okay. That's giving away a show secret, I think. But there we are.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. And if you give it the $5 or higher level, anyone can vote for the book. But if you give the $5 or higher level, we bestow upon you a superpower live on the show as a way of thanks. Every week we do it. As we said, we're barreling towards the end of the list here. There's still a ways to go, but we can. It's like we turn the last corner in the race.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're waiting for your power, it's coming.
It's going to be a joyous and sad day.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I should go then. Jeffrey Carter has the ability to repair pavement telekinetically.
Oh.
Bumpy roads, driveways, sidewalks, things like that that need repair. He can just get that done.
Like a wave of his hand and it repairs, or he knows who to call?
No. It repairs. It's a, you know. By the force of his mind, the roads come back together. It's almost like a healing factor for asphalt.
That's awesome. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that guy, you want to be behind him on the BQE.
But it's a permanent change, right?
He fixes the road. Or, for example, a driveway that you don't even want to think about how much it's going to cost to fix that.
Hmm. All right.
Repairs pavement telekinetically.
Justin Struble, and this may have already happened, but I don't care. If it's a duplicate, so be it. You guys can hang out. never spills anything. So food, drink, nothing. So he could take a full glass of water and slap it across the room, but the water would stay in the glass.
Well, he's not my kids.
He could be at like a cookout holding a plate of barbecue, and he's never going to spill any sauce on his shirt. Like, nothing's ever going to spill.
Uh-huh.
It all stays – all the consumable liquidy things stay where they need to stay.
So can wear as many light-colored clothing as he'd like without having to worry about it.
Yes.
Wow. That's a freedom that we don't think about a lot.
Correct. Also, he wouldn't, like, for say, sit on his couch, put a glass of water on the armrest of the couch next to him, then immediately turn and knock it over with his elbow. That would never happen. Hypothetically. Like, I'm just pulling out a random theoretical situation.
Mm-hmm.
But that would never happen to Justin. No, he would knock it over, but he'd pick it up and all the water would be there.
All right. Well, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
So water liquid capillarity increases in his presence.
It just stays where it needs. It doesn't.
Yet when he tips the glass to take a drink.
Well, that's because it's supposed to go
right,
that way.
Right. Who's determining?
The cosmos.
Fair enough. Like, is it the liquid's determination or the person using the liquid, or, you know, like, what if they're conflicting opinions?
Much like the discussion in Clue this week about how objects want to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knives want to cut.
Yes.
That kind of thing. The liquids want to stay in their holder until needed.
So it's the will of the liquid.
It's just the will of the universe.
Because I'm saying, like, say that Justin walks around and he wants to let's say throw a milkshake on a public official.
That's not spilling.
Oh, okay. So, now what if he is the public official and someone wants to throw the milkshake at him?
But again, that's not spilling. This is more of preventing accidents. This is not the conscious use of a thing.
Okay, so he either needs to rethink the white linen suit or be very friendly.
Right.
I really took that in a bunch of places, and mm-hmm. I think I owe you for that, so thank you. Brian Wilder is the master of submenus and optimizations. You ever find yourself deep into the settings of any electronic device, and you mm-hmm. go, I don't know what any of this is. I'm going to leave it exactly where it's at. I don't know why I have access to this. I can only mess this up. I can set the EQ on my vehicle, mids, lows, highs. I can work with that. Would you like to go to advanced EQ settings? No, I would not. Not so for Brian Wilder. Oh, yeah, tweak that. Move that thing around. Oh, no, you want the auto DNS sub mask set to sometimes.
Right.
Because we have access.
The optimal setting for TV calibrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The further you go into those menus, the more I think I could mess everything up right here and then never find this again. Yeah. Not so well, with Brian Wilder.
I found what I was looking for, tweaked it, realized I needed to tweak it more, and never been able to find how I got there.
Oh, yeah. No, if you do the like sort of reset back to factory because of a software firmware update or something like that. Have I mentioned how much I love firmware updates in all its all their forms?
You have.
Love it. I know Eero is not sponsoring the show this week, but God damn it, I love it when there's a firmware update.
Jack Cutler has the power to summon up WW Beauchamp.
I want to know what percentage of our audience immediately got that, had to look it up, or didn't give a shit.
And WW Beauchamp will chronicle who sounds like a gunslinger, Jack's adventures.
All the names, it's Jeffrey, Justin, Brian, and Jack. It's just...
The problem is, obviously, because it's WW Beauchamp, that the adventures will be, you know, overblown, overdramatized, not accurate.
I mean, you want that if you're the subject, though. Unless...
Sure, but... Unless it won't be an accurate chronicling of Jack's life. It'll burnish the myth of Jack Cutler.
Well, you know who would not be for that? Seth Bullock would not be for that. He wouldn't want that.
No. He would not have put up with that nonsense.
No, he wouldn't have.
Yeah.
He would have beaten somebody up a lot. And then held all of his emotions in. Every single bit of them. He's the most emotionally repressed character since Kevin Arnold.
Yelled at Saul for no reason. All right, so those are the patrons we want to thank. $5 or higher level at patreon.com/fanboy.
Wait, that's how you we're not going to explain who WW Beauchamp is, are we?
No, people have the internet.
Wow, I think this is the furthest that we have dug into something just for you and me in quite a while.
We're long, but do you want to do audience questions or not? I'll leave it to you.
Let's do...
You're the producer.
I want to do the last question. I want to do Juan's question because I wasn't sure where this was going to go.
Okay.
I'll read it.
Juan from L.A. Okay,
Juan from L.A. says, being children of the 80s, I imagine that at one point or another, wrestling must have caught your attention. If so, who was your favorite wrestler growing up and why? And I spent 2 days pondering whether to ask this. Okay. And I thought...
He spent 2 days pondering.
Yeah, he did. And I thought to myself, I don't know what Connor is going to say here. Because for those of you who are maybe younger than us, they don't realize that there was a bit in the early to mid 80s where WWF was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if it got you too.
You couldn't escape it if you were especially a boy of a certain age.
Yep.
That's for sure.
And we were that age.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay.
Obviously, as mentioned, we were into wrestling in the 80s, and I would say even make it to the early 90s. I guess it did make it to the early 90s, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that whole Saturday afternoon, half-hour WWF show, and, you know, I'd watch WrestleMania.
There was one, like, it was after Saturday Night Live or something, I think.
That was probably late night program, but there was always one like Saturday afternoon where it would be like a half an hour or something, and it would be like, you know, a known wrestler would wrestle some scrub, And then it happened again. And then it would be like you get one highlight match where you have two wrestlers who you knew would fight.
So I have had multiple wrestling phases, and at this point, I'm going to just shamelessly plug a pal of mine, Aubrey Sitterson, along with Chris Moreno, did a book, The Comic Book History of Professional Wrestling, which is a wonderful, wonderful book, especially if you're about this age and you remember this stuff. It explains sort of how that all came from and what the precursors and then the antecedents were of those things. Is fantastic. And I have been going to Aubrey directly about wrestling advice and information. Which is
your kids are into it.
Which is a privilege. Well, I mean, I put them into. I was like, well, let's go back and check this out. I have three wrestling periods that I can speak about. Wrestling period one is when I was this age, when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, largely. That it was the early 80s, the Goonies Are Good Enough period where Captain Lou Albano was on the City of Opera video, which was then featured in the Goonies. The Goonies was a big deal for people our age. I don't know if people...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Then there was, as we got out of college, Gordon the Intern and I, around the end of college, this would have been late 90s, we were playing a lot of WWF video games on the... I want to say... Was it Super Nintendo era? I think. Or Genesis. And then him and I got to the point where we went to a WWF... match in Syracuse, and we brought signs.
Did he do it ironically?
It was semi-ironically and semi-not ironically. Like, we recognized this is silly, but I was very happy with my, quote, Rey Mysterio Jr. is my daddy sign. And then most recently, after a long time of noticing that I had a lot of friends paying attention to wrestling, I thought, I bet my kids would like this. And by getting my kids into it, I also... found myself getting into it. And now I have wrestling thoughts, trademark, sometimes, that I try not to get too deeply into.
I only have that first period for me.
Sure. And that's...
But it was intense. Like,
so who are your guys?
I watched it every week. For my birthday, we went to Madison Square Garden.
Nice.
You know, one of those big events. My mom got us somehow... We weren't front row in the front. We were front row on the entering and exiting the rail.
Yeah.
So I remember touching Jake the Snake.
Ooh, Jake the Snake Roberts, good stuff.
Yeah, I remember slapping his arm as he came through, and it was like slapping granite.
Oiled granite.
I liked all that classic era, you know, the Rowdy Roddy Pipers, the Junkyard Dog. That was the early eight. That was the 80s era.
Junkyard Dog was going to be my first answer.
And then it was I liked Rowdy Roddy Piper.
I feel like you'd be a Hulk Hogan guy, but I guess not.
So then when you get into the early 90s and you got... I mean, Hogan was there too, but Hogan, Macho Man, Randy Savage, and Ultimate Warrior.
See, that's later than I was with it.
Hitman, Bret Hart, like those guys, that whole era. That's your classic, to me, your classic WWF era. Uh-huh. That's what me and my friends were watching it. And obviously, I was a Hulk Hogan guy. I think all kids, for the most part, were Hulk Hogan guys.
Obviously, I wasn't.
Right, but most, you know, he had the movie. He was the star. But I also liked... The Hitman was one of my favorite wrestlers. I liked Macho Man, Randy Savage. I could name you 25 wrestlers from that era still in my brain.
My first instinct was to say, Snuka. Yeah, I like him a lot. I liked Snuka. My first instinct was to say Junkyard Dog. That's the first one. Remember those big rubber wrestling figures? He was the first one I got. The next one I was going to say is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, because he did like martial arts and jumped really high and stuff in addition to the other wrestling stuff. I think those were like my favorites at the time. I know that I went to a simulcast, like you bought tickets to go to a place, but then just watch on a screen of WrestleMania 3, the big one with Hogan versus Andre the Giant. And I told Aubrey that. Wow. He was like, wow, you really did that? And I was like, yeah, because he's a little younger. I absolutely remember doing that.
Yeah, Andre the Giant was great too. Like that was, you know, it was very similar to comics. It's storytelling similar to comics and you know, good guys, bad guys, long running storylines, allegiances changing, people getting, you know, going away, coming back.
And a non changing status quo that appeared to be changing.
Yeah, it was great.
I asked Aubrey, this is totally shaped how I look at it now. I asked Aubrey, I was like, so what is the thing? And this might have been on the show I did with him, but it stuck with me in the same way that Grant Morrison's Super God stuck with me about comic books. I said, what is the thing that you like about it? Knowing the ins and outs, knowing how it works, knowing what the deal is. And he's like, he said, I love that it's all a con, every single part of it. And I was like, that's brilliant. And I watch it that way. And I've been watching my kids trying to figure out if they can figure out it's quote unquote fake.
Right.
Quote unquote it, because that's a feature, not a bug. It's not a secret, but I don't want to tell them. I want, and my older son, he's already like, wait a minute. which I'm very proud of him for. Anyway, the point is, I just spent $200 to go see SmackDown Live in June.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a thing. And they're going to go once, and then we, you know, it'll be like monster trucks. We'll get over it after we have it. We're going to have that experience. It'll be fun. And also, my wife, very nice Jewish girl from Connecticut, has sat in front of the TV with us and yelled at the TV while watching wrestling. And I consider this to be one of my finest accomplishments in life.
Well, I'm glad for you.
Uh-huh. Let's close this thing up. You want to write to contact at ifanboy.com. I just want to thank Juan. That was fun for me. I didn't know where that was going to go, but we had a moment there. Contact at ifanboy.com. You can send us a voicemail or you can send us a written question for that. Just tiny note, I make this a lot. If you have a very text-heavy analytical, not gonna be able to do that. It's not how this works.
Yeah.
Sorry. I appreciate the work you put into it, but that's not how this is going to work.
It can't be something that's going to take us 2 minutes to read in the show.
Mm-hmm. That's what we use for ads, where they want us to do 2, but then we do 8 minutes because we like talking about underwear.
Where are we at? Oh, right. So, special edition shows. Our Avengers Endgame show is out. You can find that on the feed. A lot of people listen to it, obviously. It's a big movie. I don't know if you heard about it. Also, Josh's Talk Explode with Jordan Boyd is still there for you to listen to. All of our old special edition shows are there, but those are the 2 most recent ones. Now that the apocalypse of comic films is over, that was April, I think the next one is X-Men Dark Phoenix that no one really wants to go see. So I'm not guaranteeing that we're going to do a show on that.
Oh, wow. I like that. I like that stance.
I'm not guaranteeing it. I'm not saying we're not. I'm just saying no one wants to see it.
Was there one done on the apocalypse movie?
Yes, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not saying we're gonna do it. I'm not saying we're not going to do it. I'm saying
might
do it. We don't know.
Fair enough. There will be so we got a Booksplode coming up, Daredevil Born Again, which I'm going to have to mainline. I've been reading it slowly, but I haven't figured out exactly when I'm going to read it, but that will be out next week. Daredevil Born Again by Frank Miller and Dave Mazzucchelli. God, it's beautiful. Is that a spoiler? But Jesus Christ. And then Talks will be coming up next month. I think I know who it is. I had it lined up.
Some stuff happened.
Some stuff did happen, but I think we should be good. I'm not sure, but it'll be good. It'll be, I know that. Like, they're never not good because I make sure to bring people on who are good. And that way I don't have to be good. Everyone's like, you're good at that. I'm like, I'm not. I just pick well.
So that's coming up soon. The Booksplode will be coming out this week, I believe, because we got to get in before the end of the week, end of the month. So that'll be this week. And you look forward to that. And then start all over again. In the meantime, head over to hafenboy.com. That's where you can find all these shows. And as I said, well, maybe I didn't say, there is content on that website going back to 2003. All kinds of crazy articles and things. So if you ever feel the need to dip back into the zeitgeist of comics from previous eras, it's all there at hafenboy.com.
Here's what you should Google. Top 5 boots.
Find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking iFanboy, facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter, and also follow at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. That's where you can find what the pick is, but also that's where we do our Best of the Week in Panels feature, which is a lot of fun to do. So check that out, iFanboy Comics on Instagram. Individually, we are at Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like the show, you like any show, you have podcasts, got to support them. We already talked about doing that through Patreon, all that stuff. But another way you can do it is star ratings on iTunes and word of mouth. You can tell people about what's going on. You can say the things you like. I good example, the Bear Brook podcast out of my local public radio station. As soon as I was like, oh, this is a thing that other people are going to like, not just people who live here. And lots of people have said, wow, that's great. And then that show, not because of me, but in part because of actions like that, became really big all over the world and the country. Those kind of word of mouths make a really big deal, and those can impact people's lives and get you more of the kind of content that you really like. I'm way behind on podcasts right now, by the way. I went on an audiobook binge, and then I found a bunch of other shows that I like, and now I can't decide what to do, but they're piling up on me. So I have my...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have my app set to delete anything more than 3 episodes, so I don't know that I'm missing things.
That's the best way to do it. Just don't know.
It's fine.
We have the next Neal Stephenson book comes out soon, so that'll put a hold on everything else as well.
I'm doing a Neal Stephenson audiobook. I've read one, and now I'm on a second one, and that's throwing things off.
Well, yeah, I'm reading that book as well right now.
Great, right? You.
Yes.
Great. I was like, why didn't I know about this? We're talking about The Cobweb, written by Neal Stephenson, and it's a pen name for his uncle, who's a historian.
Yeah. But didn't it originally come out of under 2 pen names?
Possibly.
That's why we didn't know about it?
It's from 1996. Now I'm reading the one before that, from 1994, which is more nascent by the same 2 people.
Well, this one, The Cobweb, feels very much like Rimdi in terms of structure.
Yes, very much.
Which I like, because that's my favorite one.
Characterization and words. I'm just saying, don't you people want an all-media podcast monthly? Do your part. All right, send
this
long. Yeah.
We gotta go.
All right.
Till next week. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks, everyone. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works 2 different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.